This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University, the university for grown-ups, where it's never too late to earn a bachelor's or master's degree to achieve your dreams. Adults of all ages choose Merrillhurst to gain knowledge from professors who practice what they teach. Now enrolling for fall term, information at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO. And now for more talk radio.
Good morning. This is KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm here with Celeste Carey. And that was not our theme music. For those of you who are regular listeners, that was Mr. James Brown. Thank you for that morning introduction. Again, this is More Talk Radio, KBOO, 100.7 in Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River, in Portland, 90.7, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. This is More Talk Radio. Let me give you our phone number so that you may join us in our conversation this morning. Those of you who wish to partake in our conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187, and you may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. Celeste shared an article a while ago, and we thought we might
revamp
or introduce people to this. It was originally published in the Daily Mail from England, I believe.
Yeah.
And was a title by Michael Hanlon. It's a relatively short article, and perhaps we'll read it and have your feedback. It's entitled World's First GM Babies Born. Now, that out of a legitimate newspaper. It's not out of, you know, one of those supermarket
tabloids.
Yeah.
And they don't mean General Motors either.
Okay. So he begins his article, "The world's first genetically modified humans have been created." It was revealed last night. Now, this is about a year ago?
Almost a year ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. "The disclosure that 30 healthy babies were born after a series of experiments in the United States provoked another furious debate about ethics. So far, two of the babies have been tested and have been found to contain genes from three parents. 15 of the children were born in the past 3 years as a result of one experimental program at the Institute for Reproductive Medicine and Science of St. Barnabas in New Jersey. The babies were born to women who had problems conceiving. Extra genes from a female donor were inserted into their eggs before they were fertilized in an attempt to enable them to conceive. Genetic fingerprints tests on 2 1-year-old children confirmed that they have inherited DNA from 3 adults, 2 women and 1 man. The fact that the children had inherited the extra genes and incorporated them into their germline means that they will, in turn, be able to pass them on to their own offspring. Altering the human germline, in effect tinkering with the very makeup of our species, is a technique shunned by the vast majority of the world's scientists. Geneticists fear that one day this method could be used to create new races of humans with extra desired characteristics, such as strength or high intelligence.
So, given the programs that we've had and some of the topics we've had in the past few months, and where we have discussed mental illness, we have discussed poverty, we've discussed anger and criminal behavior, we've discussed The fact that sometimes we don't get along based on something as simple as skin color. I would want to ask everybody to consider a point. Here it is that we are now entering a quote-unquote brave new world in which you could possibly determine what type of characteristics, both physically and mentally, your child would have. You could engineer in certain things. Given that, what would you choose? We have a world right now in which we deal with the human frailties, such as the ones I've mentioned and a host more. But with the brave new world before us and the possibility no longer something out of science fiction, what would you do in terms of choosing your offspring? Would you be willing to take the blessing, so to speak, that you received and not be concerned about how your child develops? What if you have congenital birth defects or developmental abnormalities in your family line? Would you be interested in the least in engineering those out or taking your chances? Questions today, what would you do? Would you choose to take who we are, warts and all, or would you choose to make a change and thereby possibly alter the human race and maybe not even be relevant to your children anymore? Your children having developed beyond you in a way that does not even reflect you. Give us a call. Give us your thoughts on that. This one takes a little pondering, I'm sure. Some people who have never had kids may think, well, I'm not so sure how this affects me. But even those people who don't have children, for the most part, there's something that you offer of yourself into society that helps support the idea of children, you know, whether it is public schools or whether it is being supportive of the arts or being supportive of parks and recreation, things like that. So you do support children in a broad sense. Those of you who do have kids, and especially if you've had one of those parenting days when you've been up past your eyeballs with the challenges of raising kids, the obstacles of raising kids, you have those moments when you think, I'll never do it again. Okay, well, here's your chance. You get to make a choice. What would you choose? How would you decide the outcome of your future?
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Suppose one of the issues that people face, you mentioned some of the topics we discussed in previous weeks. One of the issues that people face is the fear that their child might be perceived as different.
Yes.
And may have difficulty succeeding in society. Are you suggesting that some might, if it was possible, choose an easier path for their child? I'm wondering if it's as simple as, well, my child is very short and he gets teased in school, so I would want them to be of normal
taller
size
and small and smarter.
Or is there something even deeper than that, than physical characteristics in terms of personality, as you hinted at when you were talking about the challenges of raising children?
I speak as someone who helped raise pretty close to 35 kids and has been a mentor and foster parent. I also have a child and I have four grandsons. So I speak as someone who's been around kids a lot. I'm the kind who would take my chances. And having said that, I also know that in my family, we deal with attention deficit disorder and ADHD, which is a hyperactive aspect of it, the autism spectrum, and Asperger's syndrome. Now, having said all that, I would still take my family just the way they are, because there's a certain uniqueness we have. Oh, yes, we have challenges. We have challenges. And it's been rough sometimes, you know, because I have special needs family members. But at the same time, I love them for who they are. And it has been a grace to me because it makes me know more about how to give grace, how to be present, how to love, and how to love myself because I'm loving somebody else. So I wouldn't make that choice, but I can appreciate how some people would say, I can't do this. I don't want to do that. I've taken care of people who had spina bifida. And for those folks who don't know what that is, it means the child was born with part of the spine not fully developed or outside of the body. So I can appreciate it. But we want to hear what you think. And we want to talk with you about choices and just talk in general about what is our future as a human race, given some of these options, now that the genie is out of the bottle.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And we'll go to Harvey. Good morning, Harvey.
Good morning, Harvey. Hello?
Name of the gentleman again?
Okay. Are we speaking with Harvey?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Good morning.
Celeste?
Yes.
And Cecil.
Cecil,
hi there. Yes, I'd like to talk about being genetically modified. I believe that it's already happening. I believe that Monsanto, who's producing all the GMO foods, genetically modified organism foods, that we are the lab rats, that as we eat the food, you know, they say we are what we eat, or, you know, and so if we're eating genetically modified foods, then we are becoming genetically modified, I believe. And to what end, I don't know. We are the experiment. Now, the thing is, it's very easy for Monsanto to track us, because when you buy food at your store and you use your credit card, or any of those debit cards, it records all the food, what you're eating, and all the products, and that information is for sale.
Well, right, Harvey, but what we're talking about is the direct genetic modification of a human being.
Yes.
Either in utero, in vitro, and then having that person be a designer baby.
That's right.
So
that's right.
A little bit more to topic, what would be your thoughts on that? Because I understand what you mean about food.
Yes, I feel that's already ongoing.
Well, it is. That's what we were reading. We were talking about this article a year ago.
And it's happening around the world, and it's most probably a race amongst the genetic scientists to come up with hybrid humans. They'll be bred or they'll be designed for war. You know, it's interesting. You know, if you look at the ant population, there's the there's the queen who produces the babies, the drones. Then there's the worker ants that are mostly all female, and then there's the soldier ants. And the soldier ants are actually built very, you know, with big pincers, and they're designed differently for different functions. So I believe that genetic engineering will, in a sense, do that for us. That they'll design people for different jobs. There'll be the soldier who will be designed with a low, you know, he won't be questioning, he won't be intellectual, but he'll have like an Arnold Schwarzenegger-like body, and he'll just take orders. There'll be people who are designed for high intellectual capacity, and so on and so forth. I see that as the future. It's actually impossible to stop that, because, like I say, it's going to happen around the world. It's happening in labs in Asia.
All right.
Around the world. So we are being genetically modified, but so is
the
food.
So thank you so much, Harvey, for your call, and we'll go to our next callers.
Hey, and we'll go to Tom. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I don't like the direction of warriors and stuff. I think what would be a great thing to do to make humans to be photosynthetic creatures, so that we wouldn't need energy outside of the sun's energy. We could just live just in sunlight.
So you would do this for your children? This would be, you would want to design your kids to have this advantage?
You bet. I mean, why do we need to kill other animals to eat? Why do we need to farm? We could spend more time doing art and music and dance. I think if you weren't required to raise food and to kill animals, you might stop killing one another.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of one possible aspect of your synthesizing children, and that would be, they wouldn't be night shift workers, would they?
Well,
which would mean we would probably calm down as a species. We'd go to bed at night. But I think that's a marvelous idea. Like we wouldn't have to farm to eat. You're right, and nobody would be hungry.
It'd give us a lot more time to do more creative things.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you, Tom. Our previous caller, Harry, had mentioned about soldiers and people. And, you know, there was a court case about a decade ago about a police officer who was rejected after he scored too high on a IQ test.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost his appeal that you could be denied a position as a police officer because you were too intelligent.
Wow. And he lost his appeal based on what?
Because that was a reason to the circus court upheld that the city did not discriminate against Robert Jordan because the same standards were applied to everyone who took the test. So no one could score above 125.
They actually mandated that we don't want anybody smarter than this?
Well, you know, that's...
Oh, goodness. I bet it takes a lot of them to screw in a light bulb.
Just be careful when you go to New London, Connecticut.
That's right. Okay, I won't be jaywalking there. We'll go to our next callers. If you want to join in the conversation, the phone number is 503-231-8187. Good morning, Caleb.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
So if you could design your progeny and your grandchildren and give them an advantage, would you do it, or would you take what you have?
I would definitely take what I have, but I think that it's funny that we're talking about it here on the radio, that we would actually be offered the option to do it. I think that's kind of how they sell it.
That's true.
That they would allow average, everyday, you know, middle class people to engineer their children. I think that's a pipe dream.
Well, in truth, it already has been happening. If you want, you can have certain procedures done to increase your chances of having a female or male child. And that's fairly affordable. And now, of course, you know, so then we have to factor in affordability and just say, you know, all things being equal, if you could. The other thing is that for some people, they do genetic testing on themselves to find out if their child will have a certain hereditary condition, and they can opt not to, you know, have children. So in a sense, we already do this.
Yeah, I think that by and large, though, it wouldn't be feasible for most people to do it.
Mm-hmm. So you think that these people who had the, because there's been at least 30, there's probably been more since then, but so you think that these people who had this procedure done were probably not middle class like you and I?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I think that the way it's set up is that they need us to be sick, and like you said, special needs, and there's a whole multi-billion dollar industry built around sick people, keeping people sick.
I agree.
Absolutely dependent on the medical system.
So, for example, according to your train of thought, then, we would not engineer out, say, something like diabetes or hypertension, because that would crash certain markets.
Oh, absolutely. It's just
okay.
Like when you go to the doctor with that problem, they don't tell you that, you know, their diet change could, you know, almost reverse diabetes and almost every other ailment.
Right.
They prescribe you, you know, your monthly insulin so that you keep coming back.
That's a very good point. So it sounds like for you, don't worry about it because it's economically unfeasible. But if it was, did I hear you say you would take what you got and not an engineer?
Absolutely. I believe in, you know, the perfectness of being human.
Hello. I do, too. Thank you. You have a good day.
You, too.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on Community Radio, KBOO FM, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, and in Corvallis, 100.7. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm here with Celeste Carey.
Yes, and if you're streaming or you want to tell your friends about it, it's www.kboo.fm for more talk radio.
Call in and participate. Our numbers are 503-231-8187.
And I believe Marie is next.
Yes, good morning. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can. Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil and Celeste, and KBOO is the best, and you'll have a wonderful program. So what I want to talk about very briefly is with the radiation coming over from Fukushima and the effects on our thyroid, our bodies already are being changed because if they will fluoridate the water in other cities that are consuming fluoridated water, for example, Seattle, in the chemistry chart, the periodic table of elements, fluorine and iodine are in the same family. And that is why the radioactive iodine can interfere with the thyroid, and having fluoride will hurt the thyroid more. So what it is, these chemicals are literally changing our organs. So we human beings are being changed already by our environment.
Okay. So a little bit more on topic, given the fact that we're talking about genetically modifying our progeny, how would you feel about that? Would you feel that enough has already occurred and you'll take your future generation and future family members as they are? Or would you want to opt for changes in them, maybe to make them less susceptible to something like environmental pollutions?
Yes, I agree. Less susceptible, and I believe that the more pure we can be and the more natural as 100 years ago, we will be able to be a stronger people and have more creativity. Our brains will function better. So I think the more natural, pure way is far superior.
All righty. Well, thank you for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you for your program. Mm-hmm.
Have a good morning. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Always a good round of discussions on your show, and I appreciate that very much.
Well, thank you.
Science fiction has dashed into this territory a little bit, talking about workers in deep space being bred to be more comfortable in an inverted position so they can work upside down on assemblies,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. I think that the genie is kind of already starting to creep out of the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Your earlier caller saying that the middle class and lower class would not have options to this has some weight, but I suspect that they won't have options against it either, mm-hmm. should it become state-certified or augmented.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. Article that Cecil mentioned about the police officer,
uh-huh.
who was too smart.
Right.
I could just see, for example, if you were from a family where you might have a predisposition toward being very large in stature and very strong, you know, they select you and dumb your children down and your grandchildren down, but enhance their physique.
Right. Well,
you wouldn't have a choice, you know?
It wouldn't necessarily be one or the other in that case, but that variety of person might go to be professional soldiers,
mm-hmm.
or some such, where low intelligence is not necessarily a plus, but more aggressive tendencies, faster muscle reactions, those kinds of things already are starting to be understood in terms of what makes these things happen, you know, just different kind of muscle tissue that fires faster. They find that some long-distance runners have the capacity to carry more oxygen in their blood,
mm-hmm.
and have muscle tissues that react quicker to electrical impulses with less draw or drain.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, these kinds of things, I suspect, are in the pipeline. And generally speaking, there's not necessarily strong reasons to vote against that, in the same way that the general public sees nothing wrong with genetically or modified foodstuffs in that, well, you know, it's not going to hurt us, and the bugs aren't going to eat them, so they don't have to use so much pesticide and blah, blah, blah. So there are rationalizations that say, oh, well, this is better for these simple reasons.
So let me ask you, though, from a personal perspective, would you make the choice to have your children and your grandchildren, so forth, so on, be genetically modified, or would you just take humanity, you know, in all of this, its imperfect glory and have your kids be whatever, whoever they are?
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard you talking about your family structure and challenges in the recent past for you, and we had a grandson live with us for 10 years. He's gone back to live with his parents, or his father. But he had ADHD, and he had a lot of food allergies, and it was more than a challenge sometimes. It was tremendously stressful and maddening, and his food allergies were pretty expensive to deal with.
Oh, yes.
And the short answer is that I don't think that we know enough about the side effects. It's not the intended effects that everybody should be concerned about. Mm-hmm. It's what else happens. You know, that's the same argument against genetically modified food, in that, okay, well, yes, it lasts better, it tolerates cold, it tolerates heat, it uses less water. All that's good. But, you know, do we see in a generation or two that this is modifying our internal organs, or that our brain structure is different, or that we're getting super weeds that we've been warned about.
Right.
You know, these things, you know, once you open that box, you can't really choose what comes out of it.
That's true.
And so I would have to say I would defer.
you take your chances. I hear you. Most definitely. Well, thank you for your call and some interesting ideas.
Again, another great conversation. Thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Good day.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. If you had the choice, would you choose to change yourself, your children? The arguments might be in favor, life would be easier. Or as our last caller suggested, we may not know the long-term consequences.
Well, we wouldn't be human anymore. We'd be something else by definition. You know, one of the interesting effects of having a family riddled with ADHD is just our family get-togethers and our conversations now. For one of my brothers who, because he's a genius, and he's kind of reminds you a little bit of Sherlock Holmes sometimes, you know, some of the more recent incarnations. It's fun because we talk about everything. We're a bunch of geeks and nerds, you know, computer engineers and programmers and math teachers and just stuff like that, air traffic controllers, all that stuff, you know, my family members. But at the same time, well, you know, it has its challenges. That's just what it is. And I enjoy our spontaneity and the spark that we have. Yes, there's food allergies, there's other challenges, but isn't that part of life, learning how to cope and broaden your horizons? There's a phrase that a friend of mine and I use. It's called playing well a poorly dealt hand, from a book. And so I look at it as we play well that poorly dealt hand. Let's go to our next caller. Diane, good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
How are you?
Great. I've never called into KBOO before.
Well,
so,
thank you.
I listen to you guys, and I really enjoy your show and the topics that you discuss. And I'm actually hearing impaired, and I think if I could remove that or eradicate that from my gene pool for future generations, I would do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me what makes you want to do that, because I can respect that choice. I do.
Well, I think that it was especially challenging for me. I had a very religious family, and I didn't get hearing aids until I was an adult. So.
Okay. So you felt like you missed out on quite a bit of life.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I had a different experience than other people.
Oh, okay.
And I certainly learned how to cope, and I, you know, dealt with the hand that I was dealt,
mm-hmm.
Coped with it, rather. And I think that if I had to do it over again, it would be nice to have been able to hear. At the same time, I do have compassion for those who don't hear or who mm-hmm. have handicaps.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that would be missing from a society yeah. that had eradicated those and those who couldn't afford to be modified, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I know I have geniuses in my family as well, too. Musicians, computer, network engineers, and inventors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be going too far, trying to tap into that gene. But as far as a basic handicap, I think that it would be, that's something that I would do.
Okay.
So one other question before you go. Are you part of the signing community?
Am I part of the what?
Sign language, yes.
No, I learned how to do it when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't sign, but I do read lips from across the room, so that can get quite interesting.
It opens up a whole new world for you, different level of inclusivity. Well, thank you so much for your call and for sharing, and I appreciate your input.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
One thing that she mentioned in terms of the challenges she faced, and mentioned that she did not get hearing aids until much later in her life. And it occurred to me that the way we phrased our question about
mm-hmm.
modification, that we do a lot of modification post-birth.
Yes.
So that hearing aids or glasses
yeah.
or
various other prosthetics.
Knee replacements.
Uh-huh.
So in some cases, I mean,
we've accepted
it mm-hmm. to a certain level. But the challenge, I think, is one of the challenges is are we prepared to create something in utero? It just feels funny to me. I'm not sure. But in point of fact, none of us accept how we are, and we always try to improve ourselves. So
yes, there you go. But my question would be, at what point does the designing ourselves cause us to no longer be us?
And that is the question for our next caller. Joanne,
good morning, Joanne.
Yeah, hello. Celeste, your question to Bob, I think it was about future progeny, whatever.
Right, his kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I was just wondering if there was an inference in that question, too. Do we, in this country, have the freedom to be imperfect? And I know loud and clear the people in this country view my children and grandchildren and me as defective, but goodbye.
That was an excellent
question. I would like to say that I don't think we do have the freedom to be imperfect. I think even written into our Constitution is the expectation that somewhere, somehow, somebody's not going to be able to get what they need, and somebody has to make sure they get it. So that's an expectation that somebody, somehow, is going to be less than.
Yeah,
okay? And requiring certain protections. We may say we hold that we have these inalienable rights, you know, and that all men are created equal, but they didn't really say it in terms of including women, for one, you know. So there was a thought already that somebody was inferior i.e. imperfect.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure about the Constitution.
Well,
but
no, I'm just using that as one element, yeah.
Certainly in terms of as we experience life and as we seek to form our society, some people are preferred, some behaviors are preferred than others. And as mm-hmm. you suggested, in terms of the Constitution, in terms of that foundational document, recognizing some people as not being included, women, those who were enslaved,
mm-hmm.
and native populations. So
mm-hmm.
We make choices all the time in our society, and some people are, you know, it's an animal farm, more equal than others.
I like the way you put that. That was so good. All righty. Well, I like to think we're all equal, but, you know, that depends on how you define all and equal. We'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Carl.
Hey, good morning. You're really ranging around a lot of subjects there, actually. One of them that I was thinking of was, for example, I wear glasses, you know, I haven't got 20/20 vision.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be possible, you know, in some future time where I could get my semen reviewed so that my offspring would not have to wear glasses?
Mm-hmm.
Or how, you know, how far can you go with that? For example, if it, you know, change the genes or, you know, select the genes where they'd have a bigger brain or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly.
Well, you know, that's the reality that we're talking about, because as I said, this article was published in June 2012. So here it is now. It's May 2013. And let me see how old some of these kids were. A few of them were as old as, it doesn't say how old all of them were, but the youngest was 1 year old. 1 year old. 1 year old. Think about that.
And there was
at least 30 babies born as a set, you know, born after a series of experiments in the States.
And after what experiment?
These are genetically modified children.
Oh, okay.
Actually born.
Yeah.
And so this same process could possibly be used, like you said, to enhance your children's vision and your grandchildren's vision.
In what ways were they modified?
Well, it doesn't really go into that. I bet you could probably do a little digging. Here's the art. Well, I put it on our website, but it was a United Kingdom paper, and the article is by Michael Hanlon, Hanlon, and with the Daily Mail. And you know what was really interesting about this article is at the time that the link was forwarded to me by one of my little nerd groups, there weren't any comments. I would have thought that would have sparked a lot of comments. But, well, there it is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for calling mm-hmm. and sharing your perspective.
Alrighty.
All right. Okay. Take care. You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area. Be sure to stay tuned, because coming up at 9 o'clock, we have the Old Mo Variety Hour and more public affairs, news, information, and music just for you here on KBOO.
Before we go to our next caller, let me read a little bit more from this article. John Smeaton, National Director of Society for the Protection of Unborn Children, said, "One has tremendous sympathy for couples who suffer infertility problems, but this seems to be a further illustration of the fact that the whole process of in vitro fertilization as a means of conceiving babies lead to babies being regarded as objects on a production line.
Mm.
It is a further and very worrying step down the wrong road for humanity," Professor Cohen says. He diagnosed that women were infertile because they had defects in tiny structures in their egg cells. They took eggs from donors and, using a fine needle, sucked some of the internal material containing healthy mitochondria and injected it into eggs from the women wanting to conceive. Because the mitochondria contain genes, the baby resulting from the treatment have inherited DNA from both women. And these genes can be passed on to along the maternal line. So what do you think? Would you change? Would you alter your children or your future children? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I am really glad we're talking about this subject because it is an extension of the entire wrong-headed approach that science has had towards nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's historically that science has been trying to manipulate nature to get some sort of profit or some sort of edge over nature, as if we know better than nature itself, not understanding that nature is governed by universal laws.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it is, we are living in a vibrational universe, and what we put out, what we vibrate, is what we get. So we start off with tinkering with microbes in the lab, then we're tinkering with the food we eat, the genetically modified food we're eating, and just as a past caller said, we do not know where this is taking us. We are, they have actually reduced the entire population to a big experiment.
Yes.
But what I want to contribute here is the extension into human manipulation of genes is not only wrong-headed and dangerous, it is unnecessary. If you want to attract a soul to your womb, there is a science that's ancient, and I mean millennia, that is practiced in the East, where the woman and the man prepare for conception. And not just physical preparation, but mental and spiritual preparation. And they ask through prayers and ceremony to attract a particular soul to their womb. So we don't have respect for this kind of ancient knowledge. In the West, we always think we have to invent the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
In order to take credit and profit, etc. So that is where this is all going. And it is going to and is already backfiring. Why I'm speaking up, and this is my first time, you know, calling you guys.
Well, thank you for calling.
Yes, is because it is taking the population, just as you mentioned, I think you talked about science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
It is taking the population into this kind of, woo, we can do anything we want. We can produce whatever we want, not understanding that our children are actually gifts to us to have the experience of learning how to love and to have compassion. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, if you have a child that has any kind of defect, sometimes that soul came to those parents to, for somebody in that family to learn a lesson that they need to learn in their evolution of consciousness. It's not about the child, but the child came to be the one to bring that possibility in. So this is a much higher science. And I just want to end by saying human beings are the only beings on this planet that has the capacity to lift or change their consciousness. So this kind of thinking is very low vibration, you know.
In other words, we could make the change without tinkering on this dynamic level. We can learn how to do it just by being by looking into our higher consciousness and more of our spiritual aspects.
Exactly. We need to develop, we need to have a spiritual life. That's where our bankruptcy is. We're focused into material stuff and mental manipulation, you know, trying to get something rather than to find out what we already have inside and to bring that out into the world. We have gifts we came in here with.
That's where we need to focus.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Carol.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
You know, one of the things I really liked about what you said is the profit motive. And I can
P-R-O-F-I-T.
Yes, mm-hmm. not the seer prophet,
mm-hmm.
but too often we don't look at the gift We look at the packaging and we think, oh, good golly, no, this is not what I want. Not recognizing that maybe you should open it first before you discard it.
At the same time, I think it's very difficult, and maybe the last caller would agree, for us to dictate for others what would
yes.
be best for them.
Yes.
Some people are better equipped and able to handle certain challenges than others. So I don't think I wouldn't want to make the decision for someone else and whether or not how to raise their children or what procedures should be required or not.
Well, we had two callers that said that they would enhance vision and hearing. And I thought about that. And what occurred to me listening to both of them was, if we are called to love our family as they are, why don't we look at the broader definition? Because if you are a family and you're raising a special needs person in your family, society, your neighborhood, your community should be embracing you to help make that possible so it is not so much of a burden, which is how, by the way, I got to help raise or in some cases raise almost 35 kids. So, I reached out and I did what I could do. And some of those kids I'm still working with. I might find myself going back and picking up one of my foster kids that I had just to help out. And that's how we make it happen. That's the bridge that we should be for each other. What is that bridge over troubled waters?
Yeah, often, as you reminded us, in our society, we think that we have to do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And the way our system and healthcare system is established is that oftentimes people do not have the help, the medical knowledge or that they need, and we are often isolated. So I suppose you are correct, and part of the way in which we may solve some of the challenges is by looking at it in a community-wide basis rather than me, myself, and my little 2.5 children.
Mm-hmm. We've got three callers, and we've got about 7 minutes.
And before we go to a caller, let me
remind
that coming up is the OMO Variety Hour with a program of social and political commentary from a socialist feminist point of view. And Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we'll hear a report from the picket at Columbia Grain. The company locked out Portland longshore workers this past weekend. At 10:15, Locus Focus host Barbara Bernstein talks with farmer and college professor Philip Atkinson Leist, author of Rebuilding the Food Shed, about future options and direction and what leads to a more sustainable and just food justice, food future. 11 on Health Watch, Dr. Naiman interviews Mary Roach about her new book, Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal.
Elementary. Yeah, that's your GI tract.
Okay. And 11:30 on Madness Radio, Will Hall speaks with Sarah Davidow, psychiatric survivor and director of the Western Mass Recovery Learning Community, about the politics of language and labels, as well as the innovative program being pioneered by the Western Mass RL. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous supports. If you are not a member, consider going to kboo.fm. And clicking on the donate today. We'll go to our next caller, Steve.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for holding.
Morning. I just had a couple quick points on the matter. I have a son who has hearing loss. I also have a niece who has a pretty serious neurological disorder, very rare, but it's going to be a lifelong thing. It will actually shorten her life probably no more than 30 years. So, you know, selfishly, I would love to change those things out of the gate. But, you know, if you step back and look at it objectively, there's two problems, I think. One is that if we're all engineered to be perfect, then we all end up average. intellect will be all the same because we'll all be geniuses, which means nobody will be a genius. We'll all look like movie stars, which means we'll all look average. So I think that the end game is flawed. But two, there's so much innovation, not just technologically, but art, across the board that comes from uniqueness. And sometimes that uniqueness means suffering. It means a little bit of pain or a lot of pain. It's part of a human experience, which, if it doesn't exist anymore, we'll be losing out collectively on a lot of our existence as a humanity at large. So,
I like what you said. You're right on point for me.
I think it fails. I think the theory fails in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Once you roll it out across the board, it loses its value. And scientists aren't that smart. There will always be disease. There will always be problems. They don't account for a lot of things. So if we think we're beating back all the problems, we're just going to create new ones. And I don't think that the goal itself will be manifested properly, because you get, at least in my theory, what I just described, which is a whole bunch of bland nothing.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you.
Yes.
You got it.
I don't think we all want to, look, sound, and think alike.
No, and I think it was Francis Bacon that says, there is no beauty that has not some oddness to its proportion, which basically means, accept the beauty that is imperfect, accept the imperfection in the beauty, and I think it's the imperfection we have that gives us the greatness and the great works of art we have. Think about some of the greatest painters and sculptors. Not all of them were, quote-unquote, perfect or beautiful.
So I guess we won't have a world of people looking like me. We'll go to our next caller, though.
I'm glad that you're right now. There'll be another echo. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I think one of the biggest problems that the world is facing, or that we will ever face, and it gets very little discussion, is the question of overpopulation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place where, there's a certain number of elephants and camels and wolves and whatever that should exist here on this planet that we share with, And I think there's too many human beings. I know that's a difficult thing for people to face, but it's something that eventually they will have to.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Even though we're a little short, we think that the world is overpopulated. What I think is that it's not properly developed. There are places that should have more water
I
that could make it
a few minutes,
support the.
Maybe I could talk it, and then because you have a whole program to talk.
Okay, quickly then, because I do have another caller. I'm listening.
Well, I was going to go quickly, but you interrupted me. So go ahead. Go to your next caller. Thanks a lot.
I'm sorry, Ed. I was trying to have like a minute discussion with you. Are you still there?
No, he's not.
Or a minute discussion for that matter. Well, thank you anyway for your call, because I like what you said about thinking about the rest of the balance of life, because it's not just about all us human beings. Our next caller, Drea.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I know you just have a minute, but I just wanted to add that I agree with what most people have been saying, and I think the biggest issue that could come up from this is like a whole nother level of the same sort of issues we're seeing in classism and racism. There'll be a speciesism, and even though it could be great to say it's up to everybody to make this choice for their own kids, if I choose not to have modified kids and then they end up wanting to marry and have children with somebody who's modified, then like you said, they're having children with people who aren't even necessarily specifically human anymore. Mm-hmm. And it could just get in. I think there's just so many issues that we can't even see coming that it could turn into a huge violent conflict.
Yeah.
So thanks for taking my call.
All right. Well, thank you.
This has been a fascinating conversation, and we appreciate all of you who called and shared your opinion. We regret not being able to get to all of our callers, but remind you to call early and become a participant in this conversation.
Indeed, and we love talking with you, and we want to encourage you to talk to each other and be supportive of each other, because despite the hope for a rosy future, there is no rosy future if we don't work together. And together we will succeed.
If you have ideas for our program, drop us a line at moretalkradio@gmail.com. We'd certainly like your ideas and being a part of this community to bring programming that is relevant to you. In the meantime, have a great week. Until next week, I am Cecil Prescott.
I am Celeste Carey, and we'll hear you next week.
KBOO Community Radio continues the broadcast of the 2013 Illihi Lecture Series on Wednesday, May 8th, when we'll broadcast a talk by Jeffrey Clements.
An attorney and author, Jeffrey Clements is the co-founder of Free Speech for People, a national, nonpartisan campaign challenge, the creation of constitutional rights for corporations, overturn Citizens United versus FEC, and strengthen American democracy and self-government. Clements is the author of Corporations Are Not People.
Jeffrey Clements will be speaking at the First Congregational Church in Portland, and KBOO will broadcast the talk live at 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 8th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/Illihi2013.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot Radio Show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silent dance parties.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. The time is 9:01. Up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com. This program has also been made possible in part by Merrillhurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
Lord, I wish I was a mole in the ground. Lord, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. If I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a baby in mama's arm. I wish I was a baby in mama's arm. If I was a baby in mama's arm, could nobody do me no harm. Lord, I wish I was a baby in mama's arm.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. KBOO has been Portland's only community-owned and democratically operated radio station, and this is the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Alan Weider, and our engineer today is Joe Clement. The Old Mole Variety Hour is committed to bringing you a socialist, feminist, progressive perspective on history, politics, economics, and culture at a time in our history that Dick Gregory has so aptly called the yet-to-be United States of America. This morning, Denise Morris will be speaking with activist writer Yasmin Nair about NBA player Jason Collins. Then Movie Mole's Fran Michelle and Joe Clement review the film Shift Change that will be screened tomorrow night at Red and Black. Old Mole regular Bill Resnick speaks with activist, writer, and photographer Barbara Miner about her new book, Lessons from the Heartland. Miner will speak Friday at 4 at the Westminster Presbyterian Church. Finally, to close out the show, Ivan Hale will discuss Eve Ensler's Vagina Monologues.
We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing, singing for our lives.
Good morning, this is Denise Morris. I'm joined this morning by Yasmin Nair. We're going to talk a little bit about the recent coming out of Jason Collins. Yasmin Nair, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. It's a pleasure always to be back. Thank you.
Yes, you are a regular with us on the Old Mole, and it is great to have you back. Let me remind folks who you are. You are an activist in Chicago. You're a writer. You're involved in many organizing activities. You are also the co-founder of the online archive Against Equality, and your writing includes critical essays, book reviews, investigative journalism, exploring issues around queer politics and theory, immigration, prisons and hate crimes legislation, neoliberalism, and inequality. And I think much of that might come up in our conversation this morning. Yasmin, we are going to attempt to make something out of this coming out of Jason Collins. The recent coming out of this NBA basketball player has generated really an enormous buzz. And last week he became the first active male professional athlete to come out of the closet. And he did this with a cover story for Sports Illustrated. The story itself is in Jason Collins' own words, and some have compared him to Jackie Robinson, although many have noted that Robinson came up in a much different political climate, really 8 years before the modern civil rights movement would emerge. And this morning, we'd like to try to scratch the surface of this event in order to examine some of the